It is time now for Oh the Humanities, taking a look at humanities scholarship, research, and events on campus with Max Orr, Executive Director of Carolina Public Humanities, who joins us here now in the studio wearing the second most annoying hat in America today.
It's the hat of champions, my friend. It's the hat of champions.
He's got a Patriots hat on for y'all.
Speaking of Patriots, I brought you some dates or some things that happened on February 4th, and you can't think of a bigger Patriot. And if he were alive today, I'm sure he'd be a Patriots fan. Today is the anniversary of President George Washington's election as the first president by the Electoral College in 1789. How's that? You know, we always think of election. I assume the election happened, you know, with the votes in the fall and then the Electoral College. But it really, by then, it really matters with the Electoral College because that's the only way people would hear about the final
results. 1789, there was no popular vote, I don't think.
So
not really.
I don't know, it was the Electoral College,
and that was basically it.
This is a transition for our guests, so we'll ask our guests, but that'll be off topic. I also want to say some birthdays about four people, and I just want you to think about these people as symbols and how they're used. All of these people were born on this day. Charles Lindbergh, Rosa Parks, Betty Friedan and Dan Quayle were all, not on the same year, of course, but they were all born on this day. And the reason I bring up, you know, where these random dates and random associations is that our guest today is Jonathan Wyler's professor of political science and, of course, the author of Authoritarianism and Polarization in American Politics with Mark Hetherington, and also Prius and Pickup. How answers to four simple questions explain America, also with Mark Hetherington, really discuss this idea of politics and polarization and identity. And I think if you ask anyone about George Washington or any of those four people, you're going to get a bunch of different associations. Mm-hmm. So first of all, welcome, Jonathan Wyler. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
What do you think about those four, about those names? Are those the types of things?
So it was Rosa Parks, Dan Quayle, Charles Lindbergh, and who was the fourth one?
Betty Friedan. Of course, George Washington.
And then, of course, George, yes, you would get very different reactions from people about those five people, yeah.
So when we hear about this book, you've done a lot of press with this, you've been on national press with this, you've done a lot of book groups and whatnot. I want to know what the four simple questions are.
Right. So this research that Mark Hetherington and I have been doing for a long time now, which we use to explain why people are so divided, relies on four questions or four pairs of attributes about how people think children should be raised. And the amazing thing about these four pairs of attributes is that how people answer them predicts extraordinarily well not only their positions on a range of political issues, but whether they're Democrats or Republicans. And we can get into why this has become so. But the four pairs of attributes are, we ask people whether they like kids who have good manners or are curious, whether they think for themselves or they're obedient, whether they respect elders or are independent, or whether they're considerate or well-behaved. And I should note that, for example, if you ask people whether they think kids should be curious or have good manners, you know, I have a 21-year-old daughter, and when she was younger, of course, I wanted her to be curious, but when I took her out to eat, I didn't want her to be a disgusting slob in a restaurant.
Right, right.
So, you know, most people, when they answer these questions, their reaction is both, because they all sound good. What's interesting is when you force people to make a choice, that choice reveals a tremendous amount about how they think about the world.
Well-mannered and curious is an interesting dichotomy, because I wouldn't necessarily think of those two as being opposed to each other.
Right, and so it's, you know, you probably could do these pairings a little bit differently, but it's just the attributes, you know, that people who prefer folks who are kids, who are curious, independent, think for themselves, and even considerate, are folks who are going to be on the liberal side of the spectrum, and folks who prefer good manners and obedience and well-behaved children and respect for elders are going to be on the conservative side of the spectrum.
And that's I mean, those four attributes there suggest that if you're on the conservative side of the spectrum, that means you're kind of more traditionalistic, support the status quo. What we always talk about is just how big tent both of the two major parties are, the Democrats and the Republicans. So are there differences within the parties there
as well?
Yeah,
well, so there are certainly differences within the parties, although what's become so, one of the things that's become so interesting and notable about American politics is the degree to which people with these different worldviews, as we call them, because it's beyond liberal and conservative ideology, mm-hmm. it's something much more gut level and visceral about whether you're comfortable with change in the world or not, is the degree to which people with these different worldviews, and we call them in the new book either fixed for folks who are on the conservative side and fluid for folks who are on the liberal side, is the degree to which Americans have sorted themselves out between the political parties over the last generation. So it used to be that there were as many fixed as fluid folks among Democrats and as many fluid as fixed folks among Republicans, and that is simply no longer true. Mm-hmm. And that explains, we argue, a lot of the incredibly intense and acrimonious character of our political divide these days.
One of the things I think is really fascinating, and it's hinted in with this with the title, Prius and Pickup, is how not only do these speak to political choices or even the choices about raising children, but also that whole cultural frameworks by which people view the world, so that if we see a Prius driving by, we associate that has to be a liberal driving that car, and then they probably also have, you know, Greek yogurt in their, yeah. in their refrigerator.
I have
And a yoga mat in the backseat of their car.
Exactly.
Many a time I've been down the road and I've seen a Prius with an Obama sticker on the back, and I said, yeah, we get it. We know. We knew that we got it the first time.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and the reason that this is so important is that, you know, most Americans, or at least historically, political scientists like to note that Americans really didn't care very much about politics. Mm-hmm. Our turnout rates are low. If you ask Americans how many justices are there on the Supreme Court, a lot of people have trouble answering very simple questions like that. What makes polarization so interesting now is that our preferences and these very personal matters about things we do care about align so well with our politics, so that we do make these automatic associations now. You see somebody driving a Prius, you have all kinds of ideas in your head already, not only about the kind of car they're driving, but about the kind of person they are and the kind of politicians they support. And we just do that without even having to think about it.
And we might be driving one of those pickup trucks so we can roll coal on them, which is the creation of black smoke for the Prius, for the Priuses. Yes.
Yeah.
So is this new? I mean, we've always been polarized. So what about this is kind of new or different?
Yeah, right. So political division, of course, is not new. And for folks who have been old enough to have lived through the 1960s, mm-hmm. could be forgiven for thinking this is child's play today compared
or, you know,
to
American Civil War.
American Civil War, right. I mean, but just going back 50 years, assassinations and riots in the street on a regular basis, cop killings were normal. In all sorts of ways, we were incredibly roiled and polarized. Mm-hmm. What is distinctive, I do think, about this era of division is the degree to which Americans are, by, as I said, these kind of basic gut-level, visceral views of the world, now see themselves as totally alien from folks on the other side. Let me give one example. There's a question that was asked on a political survey in 1960. Would you be upset if your child, if you're a Democrat, married a Republican or vice versa? And about 5% of each said it would bother them if their kid married somebody from the other party. Mm-hmm. By 2010, it was 50% for Republicans and a third for Democrats. And if you asked that question today, there's no question the figures would be much higher, which is to say that this partisan hatred, the idea that folks on the other side aren't just political opponents, but people who have fundamentally the wrong values and are even a threat to America, that the sort of the depth and breadth of that sentiment is something we certainly have not seen since we've been able to track public opinion over the last 80 years or so.
Mm. I'd love to come full circle and mention that you are also the host with Matt Andrews of the Agony of Defeat podcast, which brings us to last night's game and how difficult it is being a somewhat left-leaning in my politics, but also a Patriots fan, because we saw how, you know, there was a lot of correlation that, you know, the Patriots are Trump's team and Trump seemed to want to adopt them and claim their friendship, perhaps more than they were giving back to him. But at any rate, how does this sort of consumer identity mix with this partisan identity? And is it a hopeful sign that I can be both a left-leaning person and a Patriots fan?
You're ecumenical.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say a couple of things. One, I think the sort of analogy between sports fandom and political identity is itself an interesting one. I think that kind of gut level, you know, my co-author is a Red Sox fan, I'm a Yankees fan. You know, the hatred that he experiences for the Yankees is sort of analogous to the kind of hatred that we are saying is now so common politically and used to just be relegated right to the sports
world.
And
now I have the second least popular hat.
And now
you
have the second least popular hat in the United States, right? So there's that. There's just that kind of sports identity sort of transformation of our politics. On the other hand, I would say, you know, Max, you and I were talking about this before the show, trying to ascribe ideology to sports teams when virtually all of them are owned by billionaires who are probably right wingers. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a Yankee fan. I've been getting crap from my friends for decades. You're a left-wing socialist, blah blah blah.
So is Steinbrenner.
And you write the the fact that Steinbrenner was banned, George Steinbrenner, the former Yankees owner, was banned from baseball for 2 years in the 1970s for illegal funds to the Nixon campaign. I have not lived that down to this day. So.
All right.
Well, that's very well. It, you know, I'm going to claim that it's a badge of my ecumenical. I'll take it. I'm ecumenical.
Well, it's got to be the whole state of Massachusetts at this point.
And yeah, it's a blue
right.
state.
Yeah,
right?
It's the bluest of states.
Where it's a living contradiction. So. Yeah.
Speaking with Max Orr of Carolina Public Humanities, Jonathan Weiler, the co-author of Prius and Pickup, with Mark Hetherington about polarization and partisan culture. So, what was it, 15 years ago, we had George Lakoff coming out with his theory of what was it, the nurturing parent versus the strict father model,
right.
and how that correlated with partisanship. This is similar to that. What is the difference?
Well, so Lakoff's work has been absolutely foundational, I think, to understanding modern politics in these terms. Mm-hmm. So we have tremendous respect for and owe a debt to the work that he's done. I would say a couple of things. One is I would say that our work provides, I think, a little bit more of an historical sort of motor for how we got here. You know, Lakoff is describing two different worldviews and why they oppose each other. But as we talked about a few minutes ago, I think the interesting question is, how did those worldviews become aligned so clearly with the two different political parties? Because we've always had worldview differences. What we haven't always had is worldview differences so clearly aligned with partisanship, which is, again, I think super fueled the kind of polarization that we're talking about. So an historical explanation for how the parties began to sort themselves out so that one became so attractive to fixed folks and the other became so attractive to fluid folks in ways that have now really reinforced and deepened their differences, I do think is one difference between our work.
When did that happen?
Well, I mean, you know, it could be, Max is an historian, he can speak to these things too, but I would say our story begins in around 1968 with the decision of the Nixon campaign. They had a very basic problem, which was, how do we break the stranglehold of the New Deal coalition on American politics? And their answer to that question, in simple terms, was the Southern strategy and race and law and order and shearing off what we used to call blue-collar ethnic voters from the Democratic Party and attracting them to the Republican Party. And we're going to do that by appeals to race and to their sense of the breakdown of order in American society. And then layered on top of that in the 1970s, you get feminism, changing ideas about the family, gay rights in the 80s and 90s, and then 9/11. And all of these issues, it happened, sort those two worldviews very well. Mm-hmm. Now, the two political parties didn't get in a room 50 years ago and say, let's go for the, you go for the fixed and we'll go for the fluid, right? They're just looking for issues that can help them win elections.
Right.
But they set in motion a process that over this long period of time has brought us to this extraordinary place where, I mean, Donald Trump is the perfect avatar of a fixed worldview. I don't think the Republican Party could have built a better model of that way of seeing the world than than Trump himself has been.
But isn't there in the traditional fixed worldview a sort of respect for traditional authorities that in some ways Trump flaunts, and that there is a sense of moral order that went with the fixed view that I think Trump is flaunting with his behavior?
Yeah, you're right, Max. It is true that, I mean, Trump in so many interesting ways is kind of iconoclastic. And actually on foreign policy, I think he is sort of interestingly different from this traditional notion. But the way that he speaks so well to that worldview is in his sense that something is wrong because the traditional order of American society and the people who are on top of that traditional order has been upended. And there's no question that ethnocentrism and sort of aversion and discomfort with people who look and sound different than you is really at the core of much of this worldview. And that is what he has spoke so clearly to since he's emerged as a major political figure.
We got to start wrapping up this conversation, but again, the book is Prius and Pickup, Jonathan Weiler and Mark Hetherington. The podcast on sports is Agony of Defeat, so you can check that out as well. And if you want more information on Carolina Public Humanities, humanities.unc.edu. Max, upcoming events that people
want to
know about?
Well, we are starting with Humanities in Action. Our Tuesday lecture series starts tomorrow at 4:30 at Flyleaf Books. If you're a UNC student, just bring your one card. You can register ahead of time or pay at the door for that. It's Peter Kaklanis talking about in Myanmar the Rohingya population and that very tragic situation, but a whole series of great talks coming up, and of course our Oscars night coming up on February 26th, and we'll be talking more about that hopefully in the studio.
Awesome. Again, humanities.unc.edu for more info. Max Orr, Jonathan Weiler, thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.